Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. This week, I talked to Tiffany Haddish in a hilarious, deep, thoughtful interview where we dive into family trauma, grief, sobriety, love, and dating.
I got a big heart, and I'm very forgiving, but, like, don't abuse it. It's been abused enough.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Trust me. You won't want to miss this one.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer and I love all things tech. And this is the second part in my series about DARPA, the R&D arm of the Department of Defense. If you have not listened to the previous episode, I would recommend you go back and listen to that one first to hear about the founding of the agency and its first few projects, including the world's first spy satellite, before you come on over to this one. Now, I mentioned in the last episode that there were tons of projects and historical events all happening around the formation of ARPA, which was, of course, the original name for DARPA. And that meant I had to pick and choose which ones to talk about and follow those lines of logic. One of the ones I skipped over is one I want to look at before I move on in the timeline of the agency. And the project would involve exploding nuclear warheads high above the Earth in an effort to create what would amount to a force field of sorts in order to protect the United States from an incoming nuclear strike. This project was based off the work of a physicist named Nick Christofalos. And he had come up with a hypothesis. He believed that the high-energy electrons produced in a nuclear explosion could, if it happened in Earth's magnetosphere, produce a lasting effect akin to what we now think of as an electromagnetic pulse, or EMP. These powerful blasts of electromagnetic energy can overwhelm electronic systems and cause them to fail or even to burn out entirely. And it's the sort of thing that might happen in the event of solar storms or, as it turns out, the explosion of a nuclear device. Christofalos believed that the magnetosphere would sustain the high-energy electrons, and anything relying upon electronics that would try to pass through that barrier would end up failing, including the arming and firing mechanisms on Soviet ICBMs. So they would just become ballistics. They wouldn't explode. They would be inert because the firing mechanism would never deploy. A full-scale deployment of this approach would require firing hundreds or even thousands of nuclear warheads into high altitudes. And they theorized that the high-energy electrons could last for months in the magnetosphere. Christofalos was an interesting character. He had been an elevator installer back in the late 1930s. He worked in an elevator company. It had its ups and downs. But in his spare time, he was coming up with scientific hypotheses and inventing theoretical devices. You know, little inventions like particle accelerators. So while his idea sounded wild, ARPA was willing to give it a shot because he had shown that he had a keen understanding of nuclear physics from a self-taught perspective, which seemed pretty remarkable. The test would be called Operation Argus. The U.S. chose a spot in the South Atlantic Ocean, essentially between the tip of Africa and the tip of South America. It was about as remote from human civilization as you could get without being in the Antarctic. And this was an enormous endeavor. It wasn't like one launch pad. We're talking 4,500 military personnel involved. On top of that, you had scientists, you had engineers who were all part of the test. The first test happened on August 27th, 1958. Meanwhile, thousands of miles away, on that same day, Ernest Lawrence, one of the strongest advocates for nuclear weapons development and testing, passed away. Ernest Lawrence and Edward Teller had been the gung-ho proponents of building out a nuclear arsenal, including the hydrogen bomb and bigger weapons beyond that. He had, at the time, been attending a conference dedicated to arriving at a global ban on nuclear weapons testing. This was essentially by order of the U.S. government. President Eisenhower and Herb York, the scientific director over at ARPA, had given him this assignment. It was kind of ironic that they sent Lawrence there to talk about a nuclear test ban, considering his personal views on the subject. And that may have contributed to stress, which in turn may have contributed to his health deteriorating and then ultimately his passing. The Argus tests, which consisted of three separate nuclear weapons fired into the atmosphere on three different occasions, from late August into early September 1958, were considered a failure. The explosions did not produce the effects Christofalos had predicted. The explosions did create high-energy electrons, and they did exist a bit longer in the magnetosphere than they might have otherwise, but not at the intensity and duration that Christofalos had anticipated, not enough to be a force field protector against incoming ICBMs. So this defense was not going to pan out. There was some talk that perhaps the engineers and scientists could figure out a way to make it work if they had more time to test, but with the approaching ban on nuclear testing coming, that would make the matter moot. The ban on nuclear testing would begin on October 31st, 1958. Edward Teller, the proponent of nuclear tests and friend to Ernest Lawrence, suggested that the United States keep testing anyway. But if they were to keep those tests to less than a kiloton of force, they could probably do it and remain undetectable by all the different powers in the world that were interested in monitoring such stuff. So he essentially said, if you want to do testing on the QT, just keep those explosions below one kiloton of force. You can keep on changing up your designs and approaches to nuclear weaponry as long as we don't make the boom too big, and then no one will ever be the wiser. And essentially, Teller said, whether we choose to do this or not, you can bet the Soviets are going to be doing it. Teller was very much of that kind of opinion of the Soviet Union for all of his life. Now, when I left off in the last episode, I was talking about the Corona Project, the aforementioned spy satellites that had a public cover name called Discoverer. The nature of the Corona Project would remain classified until 1995, so for decades, the American public was kept ignorant of what Discoverer satellites were actually doing up in space, which was taking photos, mostly of the Soviet Union. By the time the Corona Project was a success, DARPA had a new director. The original director, Roy W. Johnson, resigned in 1959 after much of ARPA's work in the missile program got undermined and handed back over to the various armed services branches. The morale at ARPA was shaken as a result. People working in ARPA had the goal of advancing technology and military applications, and they were starting to feel like their work was being tossed aside or dismissed. Now, originally, Johnson's replacement was going to be a guy named Charles Critchfield. Critchfield was a nuclear physicist who had worked on the Manhattan Project. In 1959, he was working for Convair in their General Dynamics department, and he received the request to come be the director of ARPA, but he had a really good-paying gig over at Convair, so originally he was saying, I'll do it as long as I can keep my position at Convair, and then I'll just recuse myself from any project that Convair might be part of to avoid the appearance of favoritism. But the press pushed against that notion, asking, how would he be able to stay objective considering what looked like a really serious conflict of interest? So he withdrew himself from consideration. Herbert York was given the task to find someone else, and so he looked at the office of the Secretary of Defense, and there he found General Austin Betts, who was the deputy to the Director of Guided Missiles. York also warned Betts that ARPA was the target of opposition from pretty much every branch of the military. Betts understood, and he went about doing his best to mollify the concerns and the objections of military brass while letting the administrators at ARPA continue their work as best he could. Betts gets a lot of credit for stabilizing ARPA in the wake of Johnson's departure. He also worked with the branches of the armed forces to recognize ARPA's place in the overall strategy for the United States. According to Betts, military officials would look at ARPA with some level of resentment because they believe that the money that was going to ARPA could have been better spent in those respective military branches. Essentially, they're taking our money. Betts did his best to convince them that ARPA's R&D focus would be a benefit to the branches in the long run, and it was not intended to be a competing agency. I'll have more to say about DARPA's early days in just a moment, but first, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsor.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's C-O-N-C-U-R.com.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was booted!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene, and Vlastar runs the business. I understand now. It's a wise man who marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Gene. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return. Your time won't. and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In 1960, ARPA announced the launch of an Interdisciplinary Laboratory, or IDL, program. The purpose of this program was to advance materials science, which is the study of the properties of matter and potential applications, which, again, largely had to do with defense. The agency awarded three contracts that year, each contract lasting 4 years, and they all had renewable clauses attached to them. The three universities that won those first contracts were the University of Pennsylvania, Cornell University, and Northwestern University. The IDL program would continue for 12 years. It would include more universities over time. And then ARPA would transfer it to the National Science Foundation, which subsequently changed the program's name to the Materials Research Laboratories Program. That program would fund exploratory research in all sorts of materials, some of which would end up playing an important role in making better tools and equipment for the military. Also in 1960, ARPA launched a navigation satellite, the first in what would eventually become a global navigation system. It was called Transit. The project grew out of R&D work from the Johns Hopkins University's Applied Physics Laboratory. The satellite had an accuracy down to tens of meters, which helped boost map accuracy considerably. ARPA administered the project until the mid-1960s, when it would transfer that system to the United States Navy. Transit would ultimately consist of 36 satellites in orbit and would serve as the primary U.S. satellite-based navigation system until 1996, when it would be replaced by the Global Positioning System, or GPS. Over the first 2 years of ARPA's existence, the budget for its Defender program, also known as the Ballistics Missile Defense, or BMD project, was about $900 million from R&D to operations, so just under $1 billion, an enormous amount of money now and back in 1959. 1960 would be a really big year of changes for DARPA, or again, ARPA at the time. Herbert York, who was the first chief scientist, then he became director of defense research and engineering, would step down. John F. Kennedy became president of the United States, and as a result, as is frequently the case with administration changes, you started to see a house cleaning process where people who had been inhabiting certain positions and various agencies are removed and new people are put in place. But for a short time, York was essentially the acting Secretary of Defense until Kennedy's pick, a guy named McNamara, would make his way through confirmation hearings. So for a short while, Herbert York was effectively in charge of the codes for nuclear weapons in the United States, like all of them. This was before the country had established the protocols around the so-called nuclear football. So he was the head man in charge of the nuclear weapons arsenal at that point. For a few months, or a few days, really. Kennedy was concerned about communist insurgents in Southeast Asia, particularly in Vietnam. So in response, he began to task officials with coming up with counterinsurgency strategies. ARPA would play a big role in that, particularly starting in 1961. I'll get back to that in a second. But first, in 1961, after spending just a little more than a year as the director of ARPA, General Betts resigned. His replacement was a guy named Dr. Jack P. Runa, an electrical engineer who was a professor at MIT. Now, Runa was the first scientist to head up ARPA from a director level. He would step down in 1963, but in his short time as director, he would oversee many important projects and developments, including the founding of the Information Processing Techniques Office, or IPTO. More on that in our next episode. As part of Project Defender, ARPA would reach out to another young organization called JASEN. JASEN was a for-profit scientific research group largely dedicated to tackling problems related to defense and military applications. It's named after the Greek hero, Jason. And it was a secretive, exclusive group of some of the most talented scientists in the United States. Super-duper hush-hush, though. And these scientists would get top-level security clearance to various programs throughout its run. ARPA would ask Jason to pitch ideas that would improve the Defender missile defense program. One such proposal they came up with was to equip every U.S. warhead with decoys to confound the Soviet Union's anti-ballistic missile defense system. So in this case, it wasn't so much as defending against incoming missiles as to make our outgoing missiles more effective. Essentially, every warhead would deploy a decoy or more than one, up to five, to improve its chances of making it through the defenses of the USSR to detonate at its intended target. The strategy became known as penetration aids, or PENAIDS for short. This would later grow into another project called PEN-X, in which scientists work on creating multiple independently targeted reentry vehicles, also known as MIRVs, M-I-R-V-S. The Jason Group was being funded by ARPA, but it was so secretive, and its work was so important to U.S. defense, that the scientists were able to put tough restrictions on ARPA's involvement with their work. Like, crazy restrictions. They demanded that they would be allowed to work on their own, solving whatever problems were assigned to them without outside interference, and the only person from ARPA who was allowed to attend their summer sessions, and this was a concession they made. Most of the members of Jason, by the way, were teaching throughout most of the year. The summer was when they would have time off, and so they would dedicate that to working on these problems. The only person from ARPA who could go to this summer session was the director himself, Jack Runa. No one else from ARPA would be allowed to hang out with the scientists. And eventually Runa agreed to this because they needed these guys. The Jason scientists also worked on a super top secret project on directed energy beam weapons. So one of the important members of the Jason group was a guy named Charles Townes. Charles Townes built the first MASER. That's the microwave-based precursor of the laser. So the team wanted to explore the possibility of using directed energy beams to send blasts at, say, an incoming missile in order to disarm it. There have been numerous directed energy beam projects at DARPA. Most of those remain classified, so we can only guess as to how far along they have come. Although a lot of people will say that the technology being worked on at various projects that are funded by DARPA tends to be up to 10 years ahead of the stuff you would see out in the quote-unquote real world. So that's something to think about. Meanwhile, in Hawaii, ARPA began a project called the ARPA Midcourse Optical Station, or AMOS, A-M-O-S, in 1961. This was an observatory that was meant to detect, image, and take measurements of space objects like satellites, payloads, and other stuff, like missiles, re-entering the Earth's atmosphere. The facility is on top of a mountain in Maui, Hawaii. It would take years to build this facility and the instruments needed to carry out the task, but it all started in 1961. In 1969, it was an established facility. It entered into its second phase of operation, in which it would measure reentry bodies as part of the Advanced Ballistic Reentry System project. And in 1984, DARPA, at that point, the agency's name had changed, kinda. It had changed back in 1972. They would change back to ARPA and then back to DARPA again, but we'll get there. Anyway, in 1984, DARPA transferred the facility over to the U.S. Air Force to become part of the Air Force Space Tracking System. In 1993, AMOS got a name change. At least the acronym has now changed. Now it stands for Air Force Maui Optical and Supercomputing Site. So remember when I talked about the counterinsurgency efforts that Kennedy was interested in? Well, in 1961, that took shape as a huge initiative, probably the third biggest project DARPA was tackling behind Defender and Vela, Vela being the project to be able to detect nuclear weapons detonations. This project was called Agile, and it was a joint effort between ARPA. There was a group of advisors called the Military Assistance Advisory Group, or MAAG, and South Vietnam officials, like the president of South Vietnam. The project would have to deal with an entirely different approach than the counter-ballistics work that ARPA had been involved with. This was a major switching of gears from missile warfare to how to get a technological advantage over enemy forces that were at home fighting in, say, jungle environments. One of the champions of Project Agile was a guy named William Godel, an intelligence operative who worked with ARPA and who acted as sort of a liaison between various intelligence agencies and ARPA. While many of the scientists at ARPA came from a perspective of advancing the U.S. capabilities in nuclear warfare, Gödel was looking at things from a different point of view. He was interested in psychological warfare and the alleged brainwashing techniques used by communists in the 50s and early 60s, and he advocated for the creation of an ARPA branch in Southeast Asia. Kennedy agreed, and the agency established the ARPA Combat Development and Test Center. More on what they did in just a moment, but first, another quick break to thank our sponsor.
Working remotely? Where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was booted!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene, and Vlastar runs the business. I understand now. It's a wise man who marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Jean. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Jean, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return, your time won't, and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. I'm excited to announce a new season of my podcast, Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. Our guests this season remind us to embrace change and fearlessly look toward the future. Like Andrew Jarecki, award-winning filmmaker and creator of Movie Phone.
The studios didn't really control the theaters didn't control the studios. And I thought, well, there's a window in here where I could make things easier for the consumer and also make something that would be very useful for the industry.
Or Kellen Kenny, Chief Marketing and Growth Officer at AT&T, who installed fiber in customers' houses rather than leading from afar.
It is so crucial that you spend time with the customers. That is the best lesson.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to a brand new season of Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, we'll boot it!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene, and Vlastar on the business. I understand now. It's a wise man who marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Jean. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Jean, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return, your time won't, and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. I'm excited to announce a new season of my podcast, Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. Our guests this season remind us to embrace change and fearlessly look toward the future. Like Andrew Jarecki, award-winning filmmaker and creator of Movie Phone.
The studios didn't really control the theaters. The theaters didn't control the studios. And I thought, well, there's a window in here where I could make things easier for the consumer and also make something that would be very useful for the industry.
Or Kellen Kenny, Chief Marketing and Growth Officer at AT&T, who installed fiber in customers' houses rather than leading from afar.
It is so crucial that you spend time with the customers. That is the best lesson.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to a brand new season of Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Godel wanted to develop techniques to teach the South Vietnamese military how to combat insurgents, preferably in a way that would not require the United States to get directly involved. And in that way, the United States could push back against the spread of communism without being on the ground in a war. So the thought was that Project Agile would develop not just technology, but best practices for the South Vietnamese military to use to fight off the Viet Cong and the spread of communism. It was the most active ARPA would get in actual military operations. One of the many developments under Project Agile, which covered tons of different sub-projects, and one of the most tragic, in fact, I would argue it's probably the most tragic of the projects that Agile was focused on, was the development of these so-called rainbow agents. These were chemical agents, and they were meant to kill off vegetation. They were herbicides. They were designed to remove jungle cover and also to take away any advantage insurgents might have while engaging in guerrilla warfare and to affect food supply. Although Godel was largely looking at this as a way of taking away the jungle cover to remove that advantage that the Viet Cong held. The most famous of these rainbow agents was, of course, Agent Orange. Now, Agent Orange is a mixture of two major herbicides, and it also happens to be incredibly toxic to human beings. The president of Vietnam, President Diem, wanted to use herbicide in large regions, which would affect both insurgents and innocent Vietnamese citizens. The herbicide would affect jungles and food crops, including food crops just grown by innocent people, not people who were feeding the Viet Cong. Diem's goal was to make the Viet Cong, those communist insurgents, dependent upon the South Vietnamese government for food, and that would force them to obey him. So he took this tool that ARPA had created, this herbicide, and he put it to use in a wide area, affecting thousands of people. Agent Orange can damage genes, and it can lead to birth defects in offspring. It can lead to higher instances of cancer to people who have been exposed to it. It's one of the most terrible weapons created by the United States and actually put to use in warfare. I also think it's an example of some of the mental gymnastics that William Godel was able to go through to justify the existence of this program to begin with. The Geneva Convention expressly forbids chemical and biological weapons. And if you use them, you're going to be the target of the international community's scorn and worse. And the United States did not want to court that scorn. But destroying an enemy's food supply is not against the Geneva Convention. You can do that, and it's quote-unquote fair. The rules of what is and isn't fair in warfare still kind of perplex me. It's a weird thing to think about, that something that is terrible to people in one way is not against the rules, and something that's terrible to people in a different way is against the rules. Blows my mind. Anyway, framing this project as targeting not the people, but their food and the jungle itself wasn't against the Geneva Convention, at least not on the surface. However, since the chemicals were distributed by plane or helicopter, which meant they were sprayed over large, often populated areas, I think it's kind of hard to say we were just aiming for the jungle and the food. We didn't mean to get the people too. Despite all that, President Kennedy approved the use of the herbicide, though admittedly he did cut the scope of the proposed use by a significant amount. Even so, by the end of the Vietnam War, about 19 million gallons of the stuff had been unleashed in Vietnam. The estimates on the number of Vietnamese directly exposed to the chemicals range from 2.1 million people on the conservative side up to 4.8 million people. It's truly horrifying stuff. Now, the documentation for Project Agile outlines 8 sub-project areas. There's tactical unit weapon systems, area fire weapon systems, remote area mobility and logistics systems, communication systems, combat surveillance and target acquisition systems, individual and special projects, technical planning and programming, and finally, research and exploratory development. The work in Project Agile would lead to stuff like flamethrowers, and then the adoption of the M16 as the infantry weapon of choice for U.S. soldiers. The M16 was based off the Colt AR-15, a style of rifle that today has a pretty horrific reputation in various shooting incidents. The AR-15 fires 5.56 ammunition, 5.56 millimeter ammunition. During Project Agile, the U.S. military mostly was using the M14 rifle for its soldiers. The M14 fires a heavy 7.62 millimeter ammunition, 7.62. The prevailing wisdom was that the 5.56 ammo would not pack the punch needed in U.S. military operations. Part of Project Agile had ARPA scientists heading up projects to improve and test AR-15s to change them into a new type of light assault rifle so that the lighter weapon could replace this heavier M14 and it would be more useful to Vietnamese soldiers who the group viewed as being smaller than American soldiers and therefore they would need lighter weapons. I'm not going to comment on that other than to say that that was their conclusion. Anyway, that led to the M16. Which until fairly recently was the primary weapon of the U.S. military. It's since been largely replaced by the M4 carbine, which is another 5.56 ammo gun. Now, I'm going to spare you guys the language that's in the reports on the performance of the AR-15s that ARPA had issued to U.S. Special Forces for live field tests, meaning that soldiers were carrying this into actual combat scenarios. Suffice it to say that the weapons were found to be very effective. And the language makes that clear in how deadly the weapons were in actual combat situations. It's really disturbing stuff, actually, how casually These reports refer to the lethality of the weapons. It's very matter of fact, which I get, I suppose, from a, you know, observing and evaluating the performance of a tool. But when you realize that the execution of that tool is the literal end of someone's life, it's pretty sobering stuff. Other parts of Project Agile seem fairly bizarre. For example, there was a canine program that was part of Project Agile. In this program, ARPA proposed developing a chemical scent that dogs could detect, but humans could not. And the idea was that Vietnamese soldiers could quietly and secretly mark large groups of people with such a chemical, or maybe even have an aircraft pass overhead and spray it out. The chemical would be harmless, but it would be detectable by these canines. And then Vietnamese soldiers could use dogs to track people who turned up in suspicious places as a result. ARPA tested a chemical they called squalene. This was made from shark and fish liver oil. The tests proved promising when they were conducted over at Fort Benning, Georgia, not too far from where I am. But then they took it over to Vietnam and discovered that the dogs would not be able to follow the scent for very long in the hotter, more humid environments. ARPA also developed a quiet power glider meant to fly just over the jungle canopy silently or near silently over in Vietnam. Rather, of course, ARPA did not develop this itself. It funded the development of this. They first reached out to the Navy and got two unpowered SGS-232 gliders. Those were made by a company called the Schweitzer Aircraft Corporation. ARPA then handed those over to the company Lockheed, which used its Skunk Works Special Projects Division. Skunk Works is where all the super top secret work at Lockheed happens. And Lockheed would install Volkswagen air-cooled engines in the gliders that would connect to the propellers. The aircraft ran pretty quietly, though not as quietly as the Army would like. They eventually would send the gliders back to Lockheed to make some changes. Now, at one point, there was talk of experimenting with radar-absorbing paint to reduce the radar signature of these gliders, but the team ultimately decided that that was beyond the scope of their project. The gliders were in limited use during Vietnam, but more importantly, they led to the development of other spy plane technology, stealth technology, and unmanned drones. Project Agile also included calls for new types of shotguns, new rifle grenades, sound cannons, cannons that would actually use sound waves as a shock deliverer, and bombs that could detonate between the top of a jungle canopy and the ground below. And besides weapons, the agency was funding research into stuff like anti-venom kits in the event of a snake bite. They were creating leech repellent, you know, glamorous stuff. They were also funding projects that would retrofit existing vehicles so that they could move more effectively through the jungle environments. And they began to work to develop more advanced communication systems to help with logistics. And it was a huge undertaking. And this would fuel research for several years and result in many more changes in U.S. military operations, not all of them good ones. Project Agile would continue until 1974, when ARPA would officially conclude it. Actually, at that point, they were called DARPA. Between its launch and its end, ARPA would officially kick off the Information Processing Techniques Office and put J.C.R. Licklider in charge of it. Licklider would begin several projects that would have an enormous impact, not just on the United States, but the entire world. That would include the first steps towards the establishment of the internet. Now, I'll talk about that more in the next episode. For now, let's conclude this second part of our story about DARPA. We will continue our look in our next episode, exploring some of the more bizarre things that DARPA's been involved with, as well as the baby steps that would lead to the internet. And keep in mind, every single thing I've talked about, every project I've talked about, I could do a full episode or maybe a couple of episodes to really cover, because there are tons of implications there, things that would spin off and become technological advancements in other areas. And it's all fascinating stuff, sometimes terrifying as well. But if you have any requests, maybe there's something you heard in this episode, or maybe there's some other tech topic you would like me to cover, go on and visit techstuffpodcast.com. That's our website where you'll find all the ways to contact the show. And don't forget to head on over to tpublic.com/techstuff for our merchandise store. Remember, TeePublic holds crazy, amazing sales all through the holiday season. So be sure to check back. You never know. You might find the perfect gift for that loved one, or in the case of my merchandise, your worst enemy. I'm not judging. I just thank you for the purchases. Every single one goes to help the show. Also, don't forget, Tech Stuff has been nominated for an iHeartRadio Podcast Award. Yay! Specifically in the category of Best Science and Tech Podcast. You can vote for the show. Your votes determine who wins this. So you could vote by tweeting. Your tweet has to include the category, so science and tech, has to include the nominee, which is Tech Stuff, and the hashtag iHeartPodcastAwards. You can use the hashtag TechPodcast or hashtag TechStuff for Tech Stuff. In fact, I would greatly appreciate that. Or if you really want to show your support, you can head over to iHeartPodcastAwards.com. On the website, you can vote up to 5 times every single day. And it sure would be nice to win that award. So make sure you check it out. Maybe there's some other shows on there that you would really like to support. I would love to see lots of great shows taking home awards as a result of this. And that wraps everything up for me. I'll talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. This week, I talked to Tiffany Haddish in a hilarious, deep, thoughtful interview where we dive into family trauma, grief, sobriety, love, and dating.
I got a big heart, and I'm very forgiving, but, like, don't abuse it. It's been abused enough.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Trust me. You won't want to miss this one.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.